let's rewind back to the time before the first Earth Day. There is no Environmental Protection Agency, no Clean Air Act. The word crisis is used a lot when describing the state of the environment.
This planet is threatened with destruction, and we who live in it with death. The heavens reek, the waters below are foul, children die in infancy, and we and the world which is our home live on the brink of nuclear annihilation. We are in a crisis of survival.
That was Barry Commoner, a famous biologist, from a CBS News report that aired on April 22, 1970. Commoner was involved with that first Earth Day, and so were many other people, like Senator Gaylord Nelson. To learn more, I spoke with Adam Rome. He wrote the book, The Genius of Earth Day. Adam Rome says Senator Nelson was really the father of the event.
Nelson's story itself, I think, is just amazing. He had been governor of Wisconsin in the late 50s and early 60s and had begun to be interested in environmental issues then. But by the time he was elected to the Senate, he had decided that the environment was the great challenge of the 60s of the decade. He introduced legislation in the Senate dealing with big issues of the day like pesticides and water pollution, and that none of them passed. He finally had the idea for what became Earth Day in late 1969. There had been a disastrous oil spill off Santa Barbara, California, and he had been out there to see it. And when he was flying back to Washington, he read an article about a tactic that the anti-Vietnam War movement had used earlier in the decade to raise awareness and to really spark action, and that was the teach-in, a kind of politicized extracurricular events on campuses. He thought the same thing about the environment could really energize and empower people. And so he called for this nationwide environmental teach-in. He hired a small staff of 20-something people to help him when his Senate staff was overwhelmed by the interest. But really, thousands and thousands of local organizers around the country made Earth Day happen.
I was struck by the diversity of the types of people that were brought together, the organizers for the first Earth Day. There were housewives and students, politicians, but even people from industry and business were involved.
Nelson, he was a liberal Democrat, but he didn't try to make Earth Day into anything in particular ideologically. In fact, he went out of his way to make it bipartisan. He asked a congressman, Republican congressman from California, to be the co-national chairman of Earth Day. So there were some places where Earth Day was more hippie-ish, more radical, on some of the more radical college campuses. But there were other places where it was a very conservative event, where no one was doing flamboyant protests, where they were trying to talk soberly about the issues. Housewives were very important for a lot of reasons. This was a chance for them to do something politically, to do something outside the home, but often to protect the health and well-being of their family and their community, which was very important. Professors were important, and students, needless to say. But as you mentioned, there were a lot of business people. There were labor leaders. The United Auto Workers was a huge supporter at the national level and in many local events as well. Walter Ruther, the head of the UAW, resolved that they were going to make the environment a bargaining issue. They weren't happy about making cars that were huge air polluters. Unfortunately, Ruther died in a plane crash just a few weeks after Earth Day and never was able to continue what he had begun to do.
The national press, which covered Earth Day in 1970, characterized it as largely a symbolic event. Your book suggests until Earth Day, there was no modern environmental movement. For example, it helped spawn environmental nonprofits around the country, and it was the impetus for environmental study programs at universities. How was this one event so influential?
Earth Day gave the environmental movement a name. It brought together, literally, often on the same stage, activists who had worked separately before. You know, air pollution, none of the national conservation organizations worked on that. That was all local organizations like Stamp Out Smog in L.A. And all of a sudden, people who had worked on wilderness or who had worked on air pollution or water pollution or pesticides or sprawl suddenly began to think that these issues weren't separate. They were all part of a big environmental crisis. That was the phrase everybody used. And then, as you said, it leads to all kinds of really specific institutional changes that helped make the environmental movement powerful in an ongoing way. Publishers suddenly see there's a huge market. A librarian at the Library of Congress said, you know, the year after Earth Day, more books about the environment came out than in the whole previous history of the U.S., which was an exaggeration, but it was still clearly indicating the trend. And after Earth Day, there's this tidal wave of environmental legislation, Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, you name it, that probably wouldn't have happened, or certainly not so quick and uncontroversial a form without Earth Day.
Is that tied to the sort of birth of environmental law and lobbying that came into its own after Earth Day?
There really were no environmental lobbyists before 1970. But after Earth Day, several organizations, including the 20-somethings who Nelson hired, they decide that they want to stay in business and they create something called Environmental Action. They amassed a list of thousands and thousands of these local organizers and these newly created local organizations that had come into existence in order to make Earth Day happen. And they made them into a lobbying force.
Your book is called The Genius of Earth Day, and I was going to ask you why. What is the genius of Earth Day?
Well, I think one part of the genius of Earth Day was the organization of it, which brought together the power of the Washington establishment that Gaylord Nelson represented with the unbelievable creativity and energy of the grassroots.
What can today's environmental groups or activists or anybody interested in the environment learn from the first Earth Day?
The very professionalization of the environmental movement, I think, has made it harder for people to think broadly about how the environmental issues connect to all kinds of other things that people are concerned about. In 1970, a lot of the Earth Day organizers really wanted to make sure that people didn't think of the environment as some separate special interest, that they saw it as intimately related to their thoughts about their family and their community and their work, as well as the other big issues of the day. And so I think that's something, especially with climate change, which is way, way bigger than an environmental issue. Thinking of it only as an environmental issue dramatically limits the number of people who will care about it or do anything about it. And I don't think the organized environmental movement has done as good a job as it might trying to get people to think more broadly about what's really at stake and why they should care and what they're willing to do.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me.
It's been a real pleasure.
Adam Rome's an environmental historian at the University of Delaware. He wrote the book, The Genius of Earth Day, and you can see historical prints and photographs from the first Earth Day from his book at our website, alleghenyfront.org.